Fred Film Radio, Venice Film Festival, Italy.
We are together until 11 a.m. and we are thrilled to welcome those four professionals for this panel on how we can write, produce and broadcast more inclusive and sustainable fictions. I'm Caroline de Chanterac. I'm the head of Spark News Cultural Programs, and we support artists and professionals from different cultural backgrounds to sensitize them to the social and environmental issues. And our purpose is to give them the desire to integrate social and environmental issues in their artistic creations. We work for that with professionals from traditional media, video games, modern art, and of course the cinema industry through the Screens of Tomorrow movement, which is the reason we are gathered today. And I'm co-moderating with Sandra.
It works, thanks. So I'm Sandra, I'm the former Spark News Managing Director, and now I'm working as an independent leading cultural program with a positive impact on social and environmental issues. I think you turned me off. Thanks. So last year we have initiated this Screen of Tomorrow movement, gathering more than 100 professionals working for the TV and cinema industry leaders such as Canal+, Banijay, Media One, Pathé, and many other companies. Our common ambition was to help the industry shifting towards sustainable and more inclusive narrative fictional. With the Screen of Tomorrow movement, we have co-created a guide to interrogate the writing habits and give more space to social and environmental issues without restricting creativity. This tool was launched, the international version of this tool was launched in the Festival de Cannes in May, and we'll be presenting more details at the end of the panels, so stay with us until the end. We are really proud to bring those subjects here to the Venice Production Bridge for the first time. This panel was made possible thanks to Vivendi and the Canal+ Group, which are founding partners of the tool. And I'm very pleased to welcome on stage Claudia. Thank you. Thank you. So Claudia Ambrosi, VP Social Societal Project at Vivendi. Thank you, Claudia, for your support since the beginning.
Thank you so much for, first of all, for being here today with us, and good morning, because it's quite early in the morning for the Venice Film Festival. It's a true pleasure for me to be here and to welcome you on behalf of Vivendi, which is indeed very proud to support this panel, both as a founding member of the Screens of Tomorrow movement, but also a sponsor of the Venice International Film Festival for the second year in a row. And it's true indeed that it's an amazing opportunity to have this conversation in a space like the Venice Festival, which is one of the most prestigious celebrations of the art of filmmaking and of the power of stories shared on screen. So thank you to the Venice Production Bridge also for hosting this panel. Caroline was announcing the topic of this panel, which is both timely and crucial, the role of stories and in particular fictions to pave the way for a more sustainable and inclusive future. Indeed, fiction does something to us individually and collectively, which is very powerful, because movies and series can provide a kind of societal dreaming space where we can figure out how things might be, other worlds, other futures, and believe in them, and maybe empathize more easily with other ways of being through characters and feel emotions that bring us together. So it's a little bit what makes their magic, but it's also where their power to inspire change lies. And that's why we are very proud to contribute to harnessing this power to make a positive change in society. Through our activities, we are based in nearly 80 countries with 40,000 employees, more or less, as many nationalities, including Italian, as you might have guessed from my name or my accent as well. And also through the diversity of our activities, because we do not only operate in the TV and movie industry, but we also encompass other creative expressions like advertising, video games, or publishing, just to name a few. But of course, in this area, and that's where I will conclude, collaboration is key, because I believe that there is not one size fits all solution, and true change at scale will only come from a variety of stories, of characters, of genre, of format. That's the reason why we are very happy to support the Screens of Tomorrow movement, because this kind of movement provides us with a platform to exchange questions, best practices, to create tools together. So we're very happy to be part of movement and support its international reach. And that's the reason why we're very proud to stand along Screens of Tomorrow for this panel, where we're going to hear from four amazing and passionate professionals who will not only bring their expertise, but I will also say the diversity of their backgrounds and perspective from different European countries, so, which is also interesting. Thank you very much for accepting to be part of this conversation. So enjoy the panel.
Thank you, Claudia. Thank you. So you give a lot of element from my introduction, so thanks. I wanted, before giving you the mic, just having a short introduction on why do we need to change the narrative and why are we doing that with the cinema industry. Because, of course, cinema has always been a source of inspiration in our lifestyles, and it has a huge power of making things happen, creating consciousness on topic and provoking action through emotion. Because cinema is reaching millions of people, so it's one of the leading media and a tool to create change. After World War II, the American way of life was promoted in Europe thanks to the movie, which spread a certain idea of how we can live in a prosperous country. This was the launch of the massive culture of consumerism. And thanks to American movie, large number of product and habit was spread in Europe, such as chewing gum, cigarettes, Coca-Cola, fast fashion and everything. But this way of life based on unlimited resources is no longer possible, sustainable in our current world. As you have all experienced, I guess, we are now facing many social and ecological issues, such as economical inequality, discrimination, but also global warming or loss of biodiversity. So we need to rethink the way we are living, considering these increasing challenges. Therefore, now more than ever, cinema has a really very important role to play. Thanks to the emotion spread by movies, it can raise collective consciousness, making the audience aware of crucial topics. But more than that, it can inspire other way of living and make us rethink our action. To reach a large audience, we need to be creative and inspiring with ecological and social issues. We don't want, and we don't need, all movies to be militant, dogmatic, or educative. And if your movie is not focused on this topic, you still can integrate this topic in the background as normal fact, normal life, and create consciousness and create change. So, maybe, yeah, to give some example, we just selected from some movie. I guess you all know them. And we wanted to just show that this kind of movie, consciously or unconsciously, bring to screen more diversity and inclusion, more sustainable practices. They have questionable lifestyles while preserving the component of what makes a movie a success. So that's really the point of the panel, of the discussion. It's not because you talk about ecology or social that you are missing your audience. For example, in 2004, a researcher studied the evolution of climate perception among people who saw the movie The Day After Tomorrow. Nearly 70% of the audience surveyed was more convinced on climate change after seeing the movie and considered adopting eco-friendly behavior. Or another example, in 2005, Brokeback Mountains received the Lion at the Venice Film Festival and brought LGBT relationship into mainstream cinema. Or another example, in 2014, after the release of the movie Orgia, Google searches on how to get vegan increased by 65%, and part of the movie team crew became to get vegan. And the last example, the more recent, I think. Don't Look Up, the movie Don't Look Up, generated more talk, discussion about climate issues without mentioning climate in the movie than the IPCC report launched at the same period. So they had a much more impact than the work of hundreds of scientists from all around the world. Even celebrities are calling for a change in narrative. Leonardo DiCaprio, again, recently tweeted, "Shifting narratives is key to incite change. Let's imagine a better future for humanity and the planet." So the discussion and workshop we had with the Screen of Tomorrow movement led us to this global observation. The awareness is nowadays stronger and shared by more and more people, but the professionals don't always know how to deal with this issue in their daily work. And more than ever, they are afraid to see their creativity, freedom, be forced to fit into boxes or quotas. That's the reason why we created this guide with them as a non-dogmatic guideline and accessible for all kind of trade in the industry and all different level of maturity on this topic, not necessarily talking to committed people or militant people. But there are other many initiatives to shift the industry, and I'm really pleased to welcome our panelists who are already working on this topic, and we will share with you your work and your vision on this crucial subject.
Thank you, Sandra. So we're going to have a 50-minute discussion with our four panelists, and then we will have a Q&A for around 15 minutes. So if you have questions, please hold down until the end. So we are really happy to bring you four on stage, as you all have a specific engagement to make this industry evolve. So please welcome Françoise Guyonnet.
Hello.
You are the Executive Managing Director of TV series at Studio Canal. You work with different European production companies to develop new high-end scripted series, and you also help to promote diversity inside Canal Plus programs. Welcome also to Paola Alvarez-Vaccaro. You are a producer and a scriptwriter. You won many awards, including two Lions at the Venice Film Festival.
Three.
Wow, sorry.
There's one that's golden and smaller, which is called a young golden lion, but still a lion.
Yeah. Three Lions, sorry. And you have founded Pinball London, a production company to bring multicultural and intersectional perspective to movies.
And TV series.
And TV series. Welcome also to Helge Albers, your former producer and the CEO of, sorry for my pronunciation, Moin Film Fund Schleswig-Holstein. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Which financially supports film, high-end series, and innovative audiovisual formats of all genres. And last but not least, Mercedes Fernandez Alonso, you are the Managing Director of the Torino Film Lab since 2016, which supports audiovisual professionals through training, development, funding, and networking activities for series and movies at different stages of development. Welcome and thank you for being there. So to begin this panel, we wanted to have like a report situation, because when we worked on the guide, we observed that three things. The first one is that social and environmental issues were taken into consideration as two different and not connected subjects. The second one was that hopefully diversity, parity, inclusion are more and more taken into consideration in the narratives. For instance, people of color who represent approximately 33% of the American population were in the 252 American top movies which were studied, they represented around 10% of the lead characters in 2011 and around 39% in 2021. So there is we are in a big evolution, but there is still a lot of things to do. And the last thing we observed that was that regarding sustainability, it is more taken into consideration through the decreasing of the shooting set carbon footprints, but not really in storylines. So, to begin our discussion, you are all from foreign nationalities, and we were very interested in having your opinions on how your national cinema industry deals with the subjects, and what are the differences between the countries. So, Françoise, we're going to start with you. You're French, but you work with different countries. Can you tell us how diversity and sustainability are treated by the French industry? And if you have noticed an evolution in the broadcasters and the audience expectations?
Yes, thank you for having me. I indeed oversee 14 production companies in 9 different European countries. It's already a way to be confronted with diversity because you can see all the cultural differences. As far as France is concerned, I think it's different regarding sustainability and gender equality and diversity. Regarding sustainability, I think that it's a concern everywhere now in Europe, and every country have more or less some eco-prod approach, and I think the industry is really moving in the same way, following some guidelines to try to be more sustainable and trying to calculate carbon footprint, etc. Regarding gender equality and sustainability, it's much more different because it has to do with our cultural or even political approach of this question. So, for instance, if I want to give an example, in France, you cannot have KPI survey around racial people, racial approach where you are coming from. So it's something we can discuss, but it's never, you don't have any, I think you don't have any numbers to give us today about diversity,
no, that's right.
Which is completely different in the English-speaking countries. If you are looking, Paula can confirm, but if you are looking in UK, you can have this approach. And for instance, this year, if you are looking at the BAFTA Awards for 2023, they have decided for the local programming that they have, if you want to apply to the award, you have to fit with 2 out of 4 of the BFI diversity standard. So they can really have a very strong approach of the subject. Saying that, I think it's a major concern, and I think that everybody is aware. The audience just want to see himself in our content, so the audience wants to see the diversity of the society they are living in. And the broadcaster and the platform, the good news is that the broadcaster and the platform are now more and more concerned about gender equality, diversity. It's a discussion we have on a daily basis.
Thank you, Paola. So we're a little bit far away from each other.
Right.
Hi, I'm there.
Good morning.
So you are in the UK. So effectively, UK is more known for this open mind on diversity. Can you give your opinion on that, and how do you, what do you observe in your country? Or you come from Argentina, so you have
yes.
Multicultural vision.
I come from Argentina. I am the granddaughter of Italian immigrants and Spanish immigrants, and I'm also an immigrant myself that has been in the UK for 23 years. So it is true, the UK does gather information, and that helps a lot. I do think that all policies, all laws, everything that is in place already in our industry and in general in society has been put in place at some point because it was benefiting whoever was in power. And it is our duty to fight for those things to change. And sometimes those things need to change at the policy level. So France doesn't have a data gathering. I know there is a movement to actually push for that data gathering to happen, very strong. I know the people from Collective 5050 are doing work and many other collectives. And so we need that data because there is a feeling in people. People have this sense. In women, in general, it's easy to see. You go to a meeting, there are 10 people, 3 of them are women. Ask the men, they will say, it was 50-50. The 50-50 sensation for men generally is 30%. That's why if you zoom into parliaments and board members' compositions, you will see this 30% repeating over and over again, unless there are quotas. And that's another conversation. So the UK has...
This is a 50-50 panel.
Absolutely.
Totally. I was just making a joke.
This is my perception of this panel is 50-50.
I didn't exactly. Yes. And so it's so important to count and look around, because that is kind of the only way where you can confront your own biases. And every time I've done... with Helge, without many panels about things like this, and it's always a majority of women. And it's incredible. Thank you for the men being here, because when you guys come in, things move faster, because you do hold the power. This is like the rape culture. Women can talk about rape culture together all we want, and we can talk about how terrible this is, bloody blah. But unless men talk among themselves and say, hey, how are we going to stop this? We are doing this. There's no rape culture, women raping each other. This is not going to stop. So when men come into the conversation with a decision to change things, gender equality advances. It's as simple as that. We can complain more, and then they decide to listen, and then things advance as well, of course. And so this will happen with everything, with race, with diversity as we know it. And if you ask me as a Latin American who immigrated to the UK and eventually to Europe, because I do consider the UK part of Europe, I think what happens is one of the biggest obstacles for Europe to include diversity is that Europe considers nationalities as a diversity parameter. And nationalities are different cultures in a continent that has been fighting for centuries and had to find a way to like each other. But the standard, the template, is white, European, and a lot of men. So different nationalities don't make diversity. And so we have to fight that, and we can only fight that from the margins. When you look around your teams, if your teams are similar to you, went to similar schools to you, come from a similar social background to you, it doesn't matter how much sensitivity you think you have to understand the other person's perspective. Unless your team has a diverse approach in its core, things are not going to come out contemplating the diverse visions. It's not about being well-intentioned. It's not about, like, you know, the Lumiere brothers, women going to, where was it, a French colony somewhere, like throwing food to the kids that were going... You know, we have to move out from that kind of mentality. It's really about who is around you, who is different from you, who didn't go to the schools you went, who doesn't have the same color skin, who doesn't have the same language. And that's when we can start talking about a diverse approach. I think the UK had to confront its colonial past much faster and much stronger, thanks to data. And that Europe hasn't confronted its colonial past properly yet, and is still dealing with guilt and with this, and, oh, I have 3 Greek and 2 Italian, this is very diverse. And it's not. And yes, thank you, one last thing. Thank you for talking about cinema and TV, because we have such power. Everything happened first on the screen when there was change. Abortion happened first on screen. In vitro fertilization happened first on screen. Divorce happened first on screen.
Black
presidents happened first on screen. And you know, there is the, if you cannot see it, you cannot be it, and all of that. But we have to go beyond the tropes now. It's such a big time for that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But when my English is really bad, so thank you to help me with your mic. Yes. But when we've been working on that, the diversity section of the guide, we had a very good discussion about not using the word diversity and talking about representing the society as it is really. Yeah. And that was really interesting to work on this, because we had to find the words not to use like diversity assets, and you know, check how many people you have, and just thinking, am I representing the society as it is really? And that's really the big mindset change of the mindset when we've been working on this.
Thank you, Paola. And you said that data is really necessary for realizing all those subjects. And Helge, you are compiling the data on the German movies. You are launching a new platform next year and to measure diversity in German movies. Can you explain us how it will work and what do you expect from the data you will collect?
Yes, thank you. Speaking from different backgrounds, I'm speaking from the point of view of the public film fund. So we are financed by taxpayers' money, and as such, we need to ask ourselves, how do we operate? Who do we operate to? How do we work with taxpayers' money in a way that is fair and equitable? And when you enter the field of diversity and inclusion as a politically backed body, you are encountering discussions that are led on very different levels, political level, on industry level, on the administrative level, inside our team, etc. They are very often led on a very emotional level, understandably. They are very often led on anecdotal levels and based on perception, on individual perceptions. And those perceptions, they can differ largely. So in order to really move forward and to drive change in a meaningful way, we need to understand where we, as an industry, where we stand in all the different dimensions of diversity. And I understand that it's not always easy to gather that data. We faced exactly that challenge and then said, but okay, we need to find a way. So we said, A, we as a public fund are in the right position to take leadership on that question, and then looked around what's already out there in the market. I mean, because we weren't the first. There are Screen and Diversity Council in the UK, I think, a network, and who run
Diamond. Yeah.
We spoke to Canada Media Fund, who worked with data and diversity, and we met with an Australian initiative, the Everyone Project, and basically started to gather a whole body of the German industry comprising of several platforms. Netflix is in there, Sky is in there, we have public broadcasting agencies, we have the European Film Academy, the German Film Academy is part of it, so it's a really broad alliance of associations and the German industry at large, joining us in a development effort leading to a platform that is essentially a data gathering tool to ask all the questions that we need to ask in a way that is data safe, that is close to the realities of the crews and the teams in Germany, and that gives us all the data we need to know on a timely basis, not only once every 3 years, but on a running continuous basis. And that's a big task. It's really difficult to arrive at something that works, and that is also respecting the limited resources we see at the production level. Nobody has time to answer any surveys. Producers don't have money. So we need to come up with a solution that's really easygoing and that's very close to the realities, and at the same time gives us the right database to draw conclusions from as public bodies, as public broadcasters, as platforms, and then to move forward each organizations with their own field and set of data. So this is basically what we're doing. We are in the beta phase right now, so we'll have a pilot phase within the German industry starting next year. And I'm very happy with what's going on. I shouldn't forget to also mention that this is not only the industry as such, as all the bodies I mentioned, but also the stakeholder groups which are involved. So we also work with Queer Media Society, with Black filmmakers in Germany, with Pro Quota, which is the Collective 50-50 equivalent, and so on. So it's important to really join forces with everybody who's involved in that context, so we arrive at a result that has a high acceptance in the industry, because if it's not accepted, we failed. And that's the process we're just in right now.
So it's like a questionnaire they're going to fill on the narrative and on the artistic team. That's it?
That's a short pitch, yes.
Okay. Want to work for him?
So, when we...
What's going on?
Sure. I don't know if he saw me or...
It's the mic.
We've been working on that. When we've been working on the gap, because
maybe the mic is has an interference.
I wanted. doesn't matter. I have a mic, so I don't need paper now anymore. You can have a mic or your.
You can have both.
Oh no, it's still not working. So we have also been collecting a lot of data on the platform of the guide. So you can find studies and data on diversity. Okay, you don't have anyone. I give this one to you. Biodiversity, economical topics. So we have a huge data, not surveyed with a professional as you are doing. I think it's really important, but surveyed it already existing from the industries or expert organization, NGOs on social and environmental issues. I want now to change the subject. We have the second learning we had when we've been working on the guide was the importance of this collaborative work, because we've been gathering producers, writers, broadcasters, filmmakers. They were really happy to share their vision on this subject and their different point of view, the different needs, the different constraints, and that was the success of this guide. It was really to mix all these people and to make them talk about it and understanding why at one point you can decide to have a character, a main character, without social details, because you leave the choice to casting director to find a good actor, and so you work on the character after it. So it was really interesting to recreate this discussion through the creativity line to the creativity chain. And so I think you are all having this approach of mixing people, collaborating people. So Mercedes, now you have a mic.
I
hope it works. You are working on writing laboratories, mixing people and nationality. So can you give us example or learnings that you have of this collaborative power?
Yeah, of course. I think for us to guarantee this diversity, inclusion, now the terms can be many, we are international, we are an international laboratory, and we pay a lot of attention to the selection process of the projects, to be sure that we have a good mirror of reality, and so not being Europe-centered, white-centered. So I think this is a very important part of our work when we select the projects, the stories, and the professionals that who will work with us during 1 year. We will work with them developing their stories. So, first point is the person you are working with when you choose them in some way, but then, of course, the stories themselves. And that's a tricky point because it is about creativity, their freedom to write what they need to express, their vision, and so on. So you cannot... So it's always... And they are very, very, you know, like, of course, it's their baby, it's their story, and you need to support them. So it's all about creating awareness in the person. So I think that... quotas are useful in the sense that it has created a conversation, so the conversation is there. But when we work with the writers, it's more about working with them as persons, as professionals, creating an awareness in them. And then, of course, this reflects in the stories. So I think this is the... you need to work with it in a creative way. And... another point which is important, and I totally agree with Paula about what she said before, is about the trainers, the tutors that we have in the writing programs. That, of course, we want to avoid that white, European, and so on approach. So it's also a work on our side to find a balanced selection of professionals who work with us.
Because you, in your laboratories, you mix writers but also producers.
That's right.
So people didn't know each other before. Can you explain us how it works, how you gather these people?
So we select, it depends on the program. Because we have a program on script writing where we invite the writer. So he's the only one from the team, but then this writer works in team with other writers. So there's this, the exchange is there. And that's why I said it's important, the selection process, because they work in group. Mm. So we want to make sure that we have, you know, different personal backgrounds, different professional backgrounds, males, females, so a balanced selection of persons who are working together. And for us, this part of collaboration is the core of Torino Film Lab methodology. It's all about exchange. It's about really professional collaboration.
And you have specific topics during the laboratories?
We have sessions on these issues. We don't have a specific laboratory on diversity, inclusion, because this is really integrated through all the programs. We have, but we will speak about it later, yeah. I guess, a program on sustainability, but for diversity is really integrated through all the activities.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Paola, you also work with different organizations and trades. You are a producer and a scriptwriter yourself, but you organize different workshops on different subjects, such as gender equality, sensitivity, narratives, and so on. Can you tell us more about these workshops and their benefits for the participants?
I generally work with organizations that feel that require something specific from what I say, and they feel that some of that, of whatever I bring, can support creators or producers. I'm very passionate about, let me rephrase it. I would say my need to do workshops and create spaces where we can learn is because I want to keep learning. And the best way to keep learning is always to share your knowledge. And I'm very passionate about power sharing. I think that whatever power I have, if I share it, I will be contributing to a better environment. There were many times where things that I wanted to learn did not exist out there. So I'm very passionate about producers knowing how to finance their films. And I'm an independent producer, so sometimes I create ad hoc things for producers. I don't do something all the time the same. For example, now I'm leading a workshop with Circle, which is a doc incubator in the Balkans that I was a tutor for some years, and it's for women documentary creators. So now they're going to launch their fiction initiative, and I'm the leader of the fiction initiative with Bianca Oana, who is a scriptwriter and a producer as well. So we are shaping that. What I generally like is to shake up things a bit, to ask people to get out of their comfort zone, to confront. I don't have a problem with, saying something that maybe is not what everybody's expecting and getting people's reaction. I do it from love. I really do think that in this industry, we have a template that has been done from a place of power, and that we all kind of, have KPIs and this and that. And I understand, big corporations with 40,000 people need a lot of this structure. But also some of the movers and shakers in the industry come from, a rebellious mind, a rebellious soul. We're all rebellious with Monday's newspaper, right? But I like to be rebellious with Friday's newspaper. So it's different things. It depends. We have created also with Helge an organization for anti-racism in European film early in the pandemic, when Matthias Wotanol, the CEO of the European Film Academy, and I had a conversation and said, what can we do? And thanks to organizations like Moin, for example, we were able to put something together and create a training for the industry at a big senior level for more than 50 or 60, executives that really hold power. Not me as a producer. I'm always trying to see who can give me a bit of power to do a film or a series. So I think this is what's important. I always think that what we're missing is, in the U.S., they're very good at this, and we're not that good yet. I'm always missing mentorships at a senior level. We mentor very well the entry-level people. And we almost, we give them something, say, okay, yeah, now you go. And actually, the crucial moment where you will need to really make change, to train yourself, to go further, is when those people who really hold power open your door, and mentor you, if you have some power already. And this is done by the system to keep itself in place. And it's generally done from men to men, men giving money to men. And so mentoring that diverse filmmaker or that different person from the power structures that is actually at a mid-range or higher position and saying, I'm going to open the big doors to you so you can continue doing that change, that we're missing, I think. And the U.S. is very good at that. Sundance Institute has been very crucial for that. One of the best producers I admire from the U.S. was mentored by Ava DuVernay. She was already very powerful, but Ava kind of went, boom. And the amount of change you can create when you have power is, very, very different than the one that you can create when you do grassroots. And both are very important.
You also told me that you can do all the workshops you want on any subjects, but...
Well, not really.
No, not true, but as a professional, you can attend to those workshops, but the best way to include those issues is working with experts or personalities who are really confronted to those issues.
Of course. Yeah, I mean, it's really absurd sometimes. Can you imagine? I mean, I have to do like a big example, like doing a whole movie about a woman that goes through abortion, and you look in the room and it's all full of very well-intentioned men. I mean, it would be, for women, we look at each other, and for us it's like a no-brainer. So can you imagine you do things about migrants that cross the bridge and you are a millionaire famous filmmaker with great intentions, but who in your team understands that first, really? And there are a lot of people who want to tell stories that haven't been given the space, because I don't know where to find them. It's like saying, you know, I'm going to try and find this. I'm going to do a meeting with deaf people. How are you going to call them? I'm just going to stand there and start screaming. Anyone wants to come? It's like, well, not really. If you want to find deaf people, you can't just go out there and scream. They won't listen to you because they're deaf, right? So this applies to every single thing. If you want to call women, you have to call. If you do quotas, sometimes women think, okay, maybe I have a space because they're reserving that space for me. I will put myself forward. If you want to do something with people who didn't have the chance to go to X university and do this and that, or they're migrants themselves, it's full. Maybe they're doing grassroots workshops in places where they live. So that bit, which seems almost logical, it doesn't happen. So you have a bourgeois space talking to each other, saying, oh, we need to do this thing, and, you know, how can we find it? I don't know, maybe such a writer is great, you know, he's very prestigious, has all this, he will understand because he's clever and he's done so many things and so has so many awards. And there you have maybe something very well crafted that when you look under the surface doesn't have the equity embedded in it. And the word is equity, because equality is not the same. Equity is giving people what they need to become leveled. Equality is trying, everybody's the same. We're not all the same, but we have to work on the hierarchies. Who do we value more? Who has the most value in what they do? And we're all full of biases. The man who has the many awards is white and represents authority comes through the door, and we all are in awe. And we have to confront it with ourselves. How do we treat those creators that are not that template? How do we look at them? How do we value them inside of us? How do we think, I'm going to do this. Oh, no, I'm just going to do whatever we have been doing because, you know. So it requires, from those who hold the real power, it requires so much. Maybe the word is courage, but maybe the word is, you know, the need to break through. And only in those places there is some light. And again, everybody's a rebel with Monday's newspaper. But the rebels that will make the changes are those who actually can put their foot down and say, it's been done enough. We don't need any more women getting naked to go into a bathtub. We've done it enough. You know, we don't need any more, you know, robbers who look like those migrants. And then we see, oh, but there are so many robbers there. When you look in the newspaper, I was a journalist before being a scriptwriter for 10 years in Argentina. And I'm very old. But, you know, I remember how the titles are made. I remember what you look for. I remember the composition of my newsroom. So, of course, everything is going to, you know, check on your own bias and give you the confirmation that what happens is actually what you believe. It's actually called confirmation bias, and it exists. So I can talk for hours,
yeah,
please. Talk.
You have so many things to say. Thank you, Paola.
That's not the problem of my life.
No, but you're really a great ambassador for us. Thank you. But now I understand you were a journalist. The industry we've been working with at Spark News, it's the media, the press, yes, industry, yes, led by white people.
Yeah. And it's not about demonizing. It's not about, let me just say one thing when we say white, because I understand a lot of people are taking it badly. This sense that there is culture wars. There is no such thing, really. There is a whole culture that's been in this way, and to shift that, when you try to take away power from those who have been privileged and getting it feels like oppression to them, believe it or not.
Yeah, it is.
And it's actually not what it is, right? Mm. It's, we're trying to say, no, the world is much bigger than that. It's much more diverse than that. We need to make space, because otherwise we'll be doing the same stories forever.
That's the point of the movement. So, Françoise, you have the power. You have a little power. I mean, you have a job. You have a private office. And you developed numerous series with a lot of different teams within the group or outside the group. So how do you spread power? How do you work with this team, make them work together to have these more inclusive or sustainable fiction narratives? What are your process intern on this?
So I'm a studio executive. And I'm very lucky because I'm working in a group which is, I'm in Canal Plus Group, which is Vivendi Group, which is very concerned about changing the world with narratives. So I'm lucky enough to work in this group. Maybe we should be quite concrete. I can give you examples. We have implemented a few years ago in our green light grid. You know, getting the green light is the holy grail for a producer. So we discussed during this green light grid, it's all about the commercial potential. Will we have money with this project? That was the purpose. And a few years ago, we have decided to implement three boxes, which are sustainability, diversity, inclusion, representation, and gender equality. So now, when I go to the green light process, I'm the one who is fighting with my boss to get money to make this production work. We are also discussing about that. And I agree with all of you. I'm discussing this with my team because we are preparing the green light. But I'm also discussing with my boss because when I present the project, I say, oh, and by the way, it's very interesting because it tackles this subject of diversity or it tackles this subject of sustainability. So I think it was really a great idea. It was an idea that we have all the executive of the studio at the same time to put these three boxes in our grid. So that's a concrete example. Another one, which is quite recent, we are in the production, and Alex is there and is working a lot on this. We are producing a series called Paris Has Fallen, based on the Has Fallen franchise. So pure entertainment, pure action, not really action. There are some snipers who come because there is an accident and there are some snipers. And with my team, we asked to the producer, and who are these snipers? Because it's just sniper one, sniper two. And we say, who are they? Because you don't read as far as I am concerned, I think it started at the development phase and at the script phase. Yeah. And it's not written in the script. You don't know. It's just sniper one. And so it's an open discussion with the producer and with the writer. And we have decided that one of the sniper is a woman. Because I don't know, as far as I am concerned, I don't know if there are female sniper in France. But there it is one on screen. And maybe there will be one in the BRI. And a
new role model.
So it's really discussing during this development phase. It's really an open discussion about what do we want to tell, how do we want to tell the story. And the last example, maybe, we are also producing a series for kids called The Adventure of Paddington, you know, based on the franchise of Paddington Bear. And for the season 3, we have, and it's animation, so you make the decision who the character is on screen. You have to draw it. And we have made the decision with the producer to have, I don't know how you say that, hard of hearing little girl. Yeah. And she has, so in the series, she has a little device in her ear that you can see because she is hard of hearing. We don't discuss about that. She's like that. She's one of the Paddington best friend, and she will interact with him. And she has this little device. So, yes, we are discussing also about disability. And it's an animated series. It's for kids. So it starts also at young development age. And it starts also with young people.
And I think you had also an example with Years and Years.
Oh, Years and Years, it's also about disability. Yeah. Years and Years was also
but
a very...
But the example is interesting.
It's just for, yeah, it's, I love this example because it was a few years ago, but it's me realizing this importance of the script and of the discussion. So I read this script of Years and Years, you know, the brilliant red production written by Russell T. Davis. And there was this girl, it's a family, and there was this girl called Rosie. And one day I discussed with the producer, and she tells me, oh, for Rosie, we have Ruth Madley. And I said, okay, I didn't realize that Rosie was disabled. And she told me, no, she was not. I mean, in the script, in Russell T. Davis' script, she was not disabled. But we have decided to have Ruth for this part because she's a brilliant actress. And it happens that she's disabled. And I love this story because it's also...
So you adapt the script?
No, they didn't adapt. They didn't change
the line. They didn't change anything, yeah.
They didn't change the line. The little sister is disabled. I love this story because that's exactly that. It's not written in the script. Yeah. You cannot see
and,
that.
And you're not doing a movie on a topic. You're just integrating normal facts of the real life. I mean...
People on wheelchairs don't talk about the fact that they're in a wheelchair all day
exactly.
long.
Exactly.
I mean, they're just people and they happen to be in a wheelchair, somebody, for example. So it's perfect. It's great.
Yeah, that's one of the points of the reflection that you don't need to sometimes make specific focus on it because sometimes it's too much to always have this focus on disabilities or diversity. Just make it normal. And just tell stories where this is normal to have people different from yourself, people in specific situation, and so that's I think it is also a good example.
Last question. Yeah, Françoise, you spoke on the financial green light and power. You have this power, Helge, to finance or not the movies. And that's why you have edited sustainable guidelines and a diversity checklist for your applicants. Can you detail the way you encourage them to pay attention to the subjects and maybe also the changes it provoked when you put this process online?
Okay. So let's look at both. In terms of sustainability, the Hamburg Film Fund, long before my time when I started there, was the first film fund in Germany to introduce a so-called green shooting badge, which was a very low bar certificate to just prove or you know control yourself in terms of ecological sustainability. That was introduced in, I think, 2012. And since then, that process has picked up on speed significantly, obviously, in society, in the larger perception. And we have been part of a movement that has led to a set of standards called Green Motion Standards in Germany that are now a nationwide entry bar, a set of criteria that has to be fulfilled to be able to apply for public funding in Germany on federal level, on regional level, and to have access to any publicly funded TV production. And also on the private level. So it's a really broad initiative that has been launched beginning of this year officially. And that's changed the picture significantly. And that was kicked off basically 10 years ago from our fund on a very small level. It also shows that you need to sow a grain somewhere. You have to start somewhere. And that has been seen in the beginning when it was pushed off as very avant-garde and very as a big blocker for production, as a big, and there was quite some question marks about why this is really necessary and what other bureaucratic hurdles do we need to produce and so on. So there was a lot of questions coming from the industry towards an instrument that really has ecological sustainability at focus. And that has changed, becoming more mainstream, and the initiative that brought us as an industry to the Green Motion Standards was nationwide, was also carried by all the associations from the industry, all the public bodies, the TVs, the platforms, and so on. It was a big communicative effort, was quite hairy at times to really arrive at something that is ambitious and doable at the same time, because you really have to weigh in, of course, what is doable also in the current climate of cost race, onsets on certain, you know, the lack of skilled work, etc. We see in the industry on one hand, and of course the need for change and the need for movement in the industry and to find the right level and to negotiate that right level from the administrative level towards the industry. That was the effort that has been done, and that's on its way now. And we will see how this works. We will evaluate in 1 or 2 years, I think, and then adjust, learn, and complete and go forward. So that's the process we're just in at the German industry. And in terms of diversity, we as Film von Hamburg, also Hamburg Schleswig-Holstein, to be precise, started from introducing the diversity checklist as something that has been the most visible element of our journey, I would say, into diversity and inclusion, but has actually started from within the organization. So I totally salute to what Paula said earlier. I think if you are serious about, you know, changing the picture, you need to start looking at who you are as an organization, which we did. We had a long discussion about our guiding principles within the fund, had a very participatory process of really making sure that everybody's on board and everybody has their voices heard of who we as a fund think we should be, we can be, and what that entails. So how do we communicate within the fund? What's the language we use within the fund? How do we communicate externally? Who do we address? Who are we there for? How do we communicate externally to our applicants? Who do we support in terms of initiatives? ARTIF, for instance. Other initiatives that are educating. How do we educate ourselves as an organization? These are all questions that concern us as an organization, first of all. How do we recruit? It's a big headache for me still and remains. I find it very challenging to look into recruitment and to assemble a more diverse team, but the vision is there. We see what we need to address is a big topic, because I feel much of the discussion and the field we are looking at is looking at social backgrounds, is looking at economical diversity, and that's something to address from the position of a well-established administrative body to be heard and to be noticed in a pocket, in a field that is not necessarily in connection with what we do, is a big challenge. We're on that journey. We are failing sometimes. We are learning. We are getting better at it. So that's what we're doing. And this is still on organizational level. So obviously for a fund, the question is how do we come to decisions? So the decision-making process was a big part of looking at diversity and inclusion within the fund, assembling juries that are diverse without knowing every single detail about their personal backgrounds, because we can't, but we have a as a fund, we have a big insight into who we are working with, who we address. So we managed to assemble juries that are from very diverse backgrounds. That has shifted the discussions, and that's also a quality, I think, of our fund. Malika, who's here, is heading our funding department, and both of us, I think, we have a very good network, and we understand who to approach in terms of a very diverse background in the decision-making process. We now have a person within our team who's exclusively responsibility for diversity and inclusion. So it's a resource topic also. You have to make money available. You have to make resources available towards the topic. And then last but not least, we came to the question of, okay, how do we make it very clear within the application process that diversity and inclusion is something that we hold very dearly and we need applicants to think about. And then we drafted the checklist, as we called it, outlining questions we as a fund have towards projects and that we would like the applicants ask their projects in terms of on-screen diversity, in terms of off-screen diversity, all the behind-the-camera structures within film teams, and more general topics such as care work and other topics. So, and that's the diversity checklist. It's a mandatory element in our application process. It's not a necessarily decisive element in our application process, because the juries we have they come to the right conclusions. They have the right discussions. They look at projects from their own perspectives, and that enriches the discussions we have in talking about the projects. But once in a while, it allows the diversity checklist allows us to go into discussions and into a dialogue with the applicants, into seeing where we feel we don't really understand why this is there, and so we ask. And that is interesting. People sometimes have good answers and sometimes they don't. And that's part of it enriches the application process for us as a public fund. So that's what we do.
Thanks a lot for this testimony. So we've been speaking mostly on narratives, but also a bit on sustainability, because, of course, it's impossible not to mention the environmental impact of the cinema industry. That's why you will find questions on the sustainability of the shooting sets in the Screens of Tomorrow guide. It's like a short checklist you can look at if you want to decrease your environmental impact with subjects such as waste, electricity, food, and so on. But decreasing the carbon footprint begins by paying attention to the scripts, because societal model and the accessories you put on screens have, of course, a big influence on the audience and also, of course, on the carbon footprint. For instance, if you promote slow mobility in your movie by making your character traveling by train, whereas by plane, it will have an impact on your carbon footprint, but it will also show other cool way to travel. And Mercedes, you have a lab on sustainability, and you give basic knowledge to your attendees, but you want to go further than that. Can you tell us your process?
Yeah, of course. Yes, it's been, we started to think about sustainability some years ago, and so it has been a process, of course. We started with small collaborations, supporting films that tackle in some way environmental issues, and then 2 years ago, we launched Green Film Lab. It's mostly producers-focused, and we focus on the ecological impact of the set. So basically, we support production teams to have more sustainable sets. The more general objective of this workshop is creating, again, an awareness, because this is always the key thing to have change, the change or the mindset change. So this is, let's say, the general objective. And in this workshop, we put together producers and sustainability managers. We have seen that a big problem in the European industry is the lack of this professional profile, which is the sustainability managers. So usually it's producers that do the work, but you really need a person because it's a lot of work. You need also very technical knowledge about materials, so you need someone who comes from sustainability, and then you need to work together with the producer, and you need to work in a very early stage of development. So to have a set with who is more respectful with the environment, you need to work when you start writing the script. And so you also need to involve the writer, because the writer can make in some way also decisions when writing the script. I mean, do you need to have that film shoot in an island, or do you need to travel to, I don't know. So, but as you say, we also want to tackle the narration part. So at the moment, we have one session during these workshops, which is called Green Ink, and we speak about that. But we are planning to work on a format where we tackle narration. So again, creating that awareness and working also on a professional profile who supports the scriptwriter in this process. So a script editor with, let's say, a special eye on that issue that can work with the writer. So that's what we are. It's a continuous process because everything is changing very fast, and so it's quite fascinating.
Thanks, Annette.
Thank you all for your testimonies. I think it's the moment where we can present the guide. That was really interesting to hear all of you, because I think every part of your words is a part of the guide, and the way we've been creating it, I think it's really important to reach people who have power and have a financial information, or I don't know how you can say that, but we definitely think that the industry has a great opportunity to create and to produce movie differently. I think as many other industries, this industry is getting transformed by these social and environmental issues, and a lot of maybe younger people are already convinced. But we have to reach people that have the power to decide, to finance other way of telling stories and showing the society as it is today. So it's not a society with unlimited resources. It's not a society where people are all from the same college and same education. And this is really our starting point when we've been working on this guide, because we don't want, it was quite difficult because you have a lot of people in the industry who are telling us, you are giving a vision, you want to push your vision. Say, no, we don't. We just want to open your mind and think about what are your automatism, or I don't know if it's English, but the way you are writing, it's because you've been writing that for years, and it's normal for you to show this on the screen because you've seen that when you were a kid. The society is not now today, it's not like that. So how we can inspire a lot of people and still make huge, fantastic movies or series and tell a different society, tell a different world. So that's what we try to do with this guideline that we had on the guide. So, Caroline, I let you give some piece, but maybe the best way is to go on the website where you have all the details.
Yes, I'm going to have a quick details first. So, as you may have gathered, the Screens of Tomorrow movement was launched last year in France, thanks to more than 100 French professionals who wanted to create those more sustainable and inclusive fictions. And we gathered professionals working for the industry leaders such as Canal+, Media One, Banijay, Pathé, and so on. So we work together on a tool to help the industry to evolve. It was really a collective work between companies, which are usually concurrents, but also with between different trades, writers, producers, filmmakers, and so on. Together, we identified the best way to address social and environmental issues in this tool, but also the best format for this publication. So it has been published in open source on the website. You will be able to look at it right after this presentation. And the most the most important principle we agreed on, as Sandra said, was to create a non-dogmatic guide. So we only ask questions, so we do not bring any answers. And so this guide is not meant to impose a certain vision of the future. And that's why we took the time to exchange a lot on the wording with all the professionals to be sure that this guide is non-dogmatic one, and it can be used for any kind of format on any subject. So it's made on a questionnaire and a resource center. It was launched in French under the name L'écran d'après in December 2022.
And the English version was launched at the Festival de Cannes, as Sandra said before. And it has been integrated in the sustainability charters of Canal+, Media One, New One, and so on. So this guide is made of a free versions questionnaire, writing, production, and distribution, because as we said, each trade can act at its own level. And this guide is like a food for thought, and the major goal is to create a discussion between all the team members to make the fiction evolve in the same way. So you will find three thematics on the writing questionnaire, which is the one which is 100% focused on the narratives. The first block of question is on who are your characters, the characters' profiles. So, as we told before, data is a necessary activation to raise awareness on the actual situation. And it helps to see how a certain population is portrayed on screen versus reality. For instance, in France, you have three persons of the lead characters, which are characters with disability, but it's the French population with disability, it's 17%. So you, as you can see, we have a big evolution possible. And in this part, we ask questions on different items, such as the features which have been chosen by the writer, and if those features could evolve to be more inclusive. So, of course, we speak on parity, gender equality, inclusion, and all the stereotypes that can be associated to those features.
But to add a little comment, and as Paola said before, for example, we don't ask in the questionnaire, do you have a male or female? We just ask, who is your main character? Just take the time to think about it. And could it be played by somebody else? Why is this type of character at the main personage of the movie? So this is really what Caroline said. It's open question. It's not ticking boxes. And I think it's really important, specifically when you speak about diversity, because if you want to have a movie with only men, because it is the topic, I mean, you still can do that.
Of course.
No, but it's important. And on the other side, but it's important because we really saw that it could be a fighting, you know, it could be fighting topic between people, because we had some people say, okay, because of you, we will have only disabled people on screen, yeah. and women. I said no, but you know, you have to find this very tiny line. We are talking about creativity. We are
but
talking
look at that. Look at your own the data that you share with us. You have 3% representation, 17% existence. That 70% of people existence,
exactly.
Their life already asked them if when they go around the world has been created for that 17%. Mm. And they will say, no, in many places I cannot enter, many places are not made for me, etc., etc. So on top of that, you're leaving 14% of those people with what it means in representation, a lot, completely outside of the system.
No, but I was going on your sharing. I was just adding that we thought it was the best way to make people change their mind. We give them figures, data, and after we ask them, okay, tell us about your character. And they're like, yeah, okay, maybe I can tell different story. Yeah. And it's not changing the thrill of my story, the interest of the script and all that. Sorry.
That's perfect. And we have also a question on the flexibility and the adaptation between writing and the casting, as you said, Françoise, just before. In the second block of question, we interrogate the character's mission. Because contemporary issues, of course, can impact the character's mission, but they need to be mentioned. And as you see, with this data, there is a lot of work to do on that. With only 0.6% of more than 37,000 TV and movie scripted, which were analyzed and mentioned climate change. The question in this part, pay attention to the characters' goals. How do they interact between each other? How is happiness represented? And of course, do they have any consciousness of the social and environmental issues? Sorry. And the last part is on the societal model. Data show us how our society has evolved. As you can see with this data on nature scenes in Disney, 80% in the 40s, but only 50% in 2000. Of course, we do not blame Disney, but the results would have been the same with different movies, because human beings tend to disconnect, to be disconnected from nature, and we can see it also in fictions. So in this part, we have questions on the representation of consumption, consumerism, how important it is in the fiction, but also personal enrichment. It's question on the way of life we want to represent in on screen. And of course, we also have a lot of questions on the place and the role of nature, and if there is any interaction between the characters and the nature. So that was the narrative questions, but as we said before, you will also find questions on the sustainable production for the producers, and you also have questions on the impact campaign for the producers and the broadcasters. The impact campaign is how you can create links between the subject you address in the fictions and the reality to give your audience the desire to take action in real life. Those three questionnaires and the Resource Center can be found in open source on the website, the screensoftomorrow.com. It's a PDF you can download and share with your team members. We have achieved our presentations, so now we can have a couple of minutes for maybe a Q&A, if you have any question in the audience for our panelists or on the Screens of Tomorrow guide.
Hello. Thank you for your presentation. Looking forward to know more about the Screens of Tomorrow project. And I would like to ask a question, quite a specific one, a case study, my personal case study. So I live in Europe 7 years. So what brought me here is a passion for cinema. And recently I've done a project which is was totally self-financed, our first debut film with the director and things like that. So it was a beautiful experience, although we faced many things, also the COVID. So my question would be, is there any, without the limitations, of course, we compromised on many things. So my question is, is there any possibility where people like us could get some feedback from professionals, what could be improved, because many times we were thinking, should we structure our movie this way or that way, how it's going to be appreciated maybe on some festivals or this and that. So, that's my question. So I would really love to know, because our film, kind of got stuck, let's say, also searching for finances and things. So still we're in the face of post-production, fixing color. So, the feedback. Thank you. Okay.
So you are not, just to understand, you are not speaking about a specific feedback
on, let's say, the themes that we are speaking here today, sustainability, inclusion, but a general feedback about the project.
How to get included into this game, let's say. Let's ask.
What we tried to achieve was also like really our, like out of six leads, there were three girls, women. It's a coming of age film. So we did our real best to be more inclusive. Our production was, although we were like a local production from Rimini in Emilia-Romagna, but we really tried our best to include, we had a splendid guy who helped us. He's from Eritrea. He's an immigrant who came to Italy, escaped the war, but he's a theatrical director. So it was just an encounter, a beautiful encounter. And he was so happy that he could get back to his craft on our really little set, so we became kind of, you know, a workshop. So we did real our best, but for some reasons, we didn't get much attention, or couldn't get much attention from, screen, those who own the media, screenings or local cinemas and things like that. So we knocked the doors, but, still were there.
Can I just chip in one second?
Yeah, of course.
I get this a lot, and it breaks my heart, and it's also a very joyful thing. Cinema is a social event, is a collective event. You've gone through that, and you're understanding that. But it's also a professional space. So many times people put their own resources, they do the film is finished, what do I do now with this? Nobody's opening the door. And unfortunately, what you need to understand, and we understand it by doing that, so congratulations and kudos to you, and I do hope that you can connect with people like Mercedes, who has labs and workshops, and in the industry we have many, so you will have to put that film through. Don't consider it finished. Put it through labs, really. Don't consider it finished. No, don't go to the cinemas anymore. Go to labs. But also, think about, you have done one mortal mistake, let's say, but not really. The film's still going, which is thinking that all it takes to make a film is money. And actually, money is just a part of what we need. We also need to be part of this community, of this industry. So there are steps in this industry that need to happen in a certain way. And so you can enter this, and everybody buys into your project. The sales companies, the executives that see your project at a lab. So sometimes that process is a long process, and it takes a lot of patience, and I understand that. And you have put a lot of resources and a lot of time. But the craft of a full film without at any point touching the industry and appearing and thinking, I'm going to go to a festival and it's going to happen, is one of the biggest fantasies that first-timers have. And I have a lot of times this same question, the people that come to me to the sessions that we do at Berlinale with the tables and all, and I always say the same thing. Look, you learn by doing in this industry. Don't consider the film finished. Start knocking on the door of labs where the industry professionals go to support you and to help you. The craft is long, especially on the first film. And then the second film, you're going to learn to maybe go to this, go to that. And don't go shooting immediately. Don't use your credit card anymore. Because that's it is. Having said that, if you go rogue from the start, you go rogue all the way sometimes. And if you succeed, I'll be the first one to cheer you. But it's a combination. Good luck. Sorry, Mercedes.
Yeah, no. Because it is true that the benefit that you get from going to a lab is the connection with the industry. So it's, of course, the feedback from the experts, but most importantly is the connection with the industry. So your project grows while your contact with potential collaborators grow as well. So, totally agree. As Torino Film Lab, we work with films before the production. You are now in post-production, you told me. So, I think you can still work on this networking part by looking for markets who work with projects at that stage. So, totally agree. That's that's an important step.
Many finishing labs also that are out there. Finishing labs. What happens is that producers, we don't let go of projects until the project is ready. So many times, even us who have done films several times, I could hold a film for a year if I need to, putting it through labs until the film is ready. Because once the film is out there, it's done. So now it's the time to continue. And shooting is just a part of the film. It's called production, and people get confused because it's a production and production, but shooting is this bit. Then it needs all the other bits.
Can I just ask a very basic question? Do you have a producer?
Well, we found a production company in Rome. So basically what we did, we shot first 10 minutes of the film, then send it like to places. So one production company liked, they helped us, like to register film and things like that. But the fact that what happened actually is that we like...
It's become a therapy session. I love it.
They did a post-production also, took care of post-production. Okay. But artistically...
Just making sure that everybody gets a chance, because equity is kind of this.
Oh, yeah.
I'm happy to talk to you for 5 minutes after this. I'll give you a one-to-one moment as a producer, and we're going to see if we can find some solution together.
Amazing.
Okay?
Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Anyone else?
Bravo, Paola.
Good morning. My name is Hélène Molinari. I'm not part of the film industry. I have launched a foundation here in Venice because I would like to write a new story for humanity and to replace the American dream by the Venetian dream and to replace the sea of consumption with the sea of consciousness. So I understand that your guide, and congratulations for it, I think it's a very good initiative, is not dogmatic, and I fully agree. But anyway, I think when we look at the young people now, they feel completely dispirited because they think that they will not be able to live on this earth at the end of this century if we don't change. So I do think that it's really important to speak about diversity. It's very important to speak about environmental issues. But I think also because this film industry has really an important impact on the subconscious of the people to dream about new way of living in connection with the nature, in connection with ourselves, etc., and probably to put less aggressivity, you know, on the film, because when we open a screen, there is a war, there is murders, there is, you know, very aggressive things, and I'm not sure if we go this way, we will save humanity. I think we have to push the industry to be much more aware. I love your word. You said many times awareness. I think we really need to do something to, you know, to push this powerful industry to save humanity.
Okay. Yeah. No, you can.
Just a quick reaction. I think your point of view is a point of view of a creator, and there are many ways to tell stories. As people investing in movies, we love having different point of view. So what you want to create is something aspirational, if I understand correctly what you want. Why not? Maybe it will be one of the project, and maybe we will see another person in this room telling us, I want something really, a bloody crime, telling, for the same reason, but a very different creative approach. So, I mean, that's the point. There are so many ways of telling story and of inspiring people. And why not your way, but there may be other ways.
Yes, that's exactly the same kind of feedback I can give you, because we're working with video game industry. And when you work with video game, the blockbusters are shooting. So I think I'm really on the right place, wrong place. So it's, and we also have been working with militant people. And they, when they think about a movie they want to do in on climate crisis, they want to do something with, how do you say, that creates, they have some violence in their storylines. And as François said, you have many ways to make people go on another direction, to create awareness. Some people will be touched by very oniric stories, in contact with nature, but this is not the main part of the population. The main part of the population read the news and click on a violence attack. And so you have to reach also these people. That's why we want to be non-dogmatic. We want really to try to catch every creators where they are. And all the creators are not interested by nature or by the sea of conscience.
But from what I wish you say, it's a big thing that she wants to
do. Yeah, I think that's great.
Strength and clarity and all the best of luck, because it's a big thing that you just proposed, and you will need that.
And that was also a discussion we had with creators, writers. When you are talking about the future, you have a lot of movies. It's access to going another planet on Mars, or the destruction of the world, and you have to restart. Not, you don't have any fiction representing a future where we are in contact with nature, we are all equal, and it doesn't exist. These movies don't exist. If you are just watching on the movie talking about tomorrow. So you have a huge space to tell wonderful stories about a very inspiring future.
Hello. My question is about, let's say, the screenplay or the script and so on. So, as producers, what do you think is the best choice to have, for example, about disability, to have a disabled actor or actress to play the role of a disabled character, or just a normal actor to play that, and also about LGBTQ plus people, for example, to avoid queer baiting and so on. I don't know.
Wants to answer. We have a part of. We had a lot of discussion with the people of the movement, the people collaborating on the workshop, because some of them were saying, role of disabled people must be played by disabled people, and some others said, okay, but it's so complicated sometimes that you don't do the movie because of that. So you have to find the right balance. What is absolutely true, and Paola said it, you have to work with experts. You can't write a script on a topic if you don't have people that know the topic writing the script. So it's true for LGBT, disability.
If I can add something, yeah. I think it's a matter of opportunities, really. If you have a whole pool of actors who have different abilities and are not fully able-bodied, for example, you want to give those actors those opportunities. So if there is a role on creating of somebody who's in a wheelchair, I would say it would be best to try to have an actor that is in a wheelchair. And if you need clout, if you need a name, if you need, you know, as a producer, work around the rest of the cast and fight for your project, and that maybe less known actor if you need to, you know, who has to be great, of course, in its craft. and say, you know, this keeps the heart of the film because of this, this, and that, and we can get the commercial side or other things with these other roles. So it's our job all the time to do this trading things. If in your heart, this is like talking to someone. When I hear Helge, I think it's great because I work with him on some of these subjects, and it's like talking to someone who has done a lot of therapy about how they feel. You know, it's very easy. People just talk and they say how they feel, etc. So when somebody has done the work, they have done the self-reflection, they have done, none of this feels different or difficult, complicated. It comes naturally because it feels right. For the LGBTQ plus part, I think if you have a trans character, trans people have some of the lowest employment rates in society across the board. A black woman who is trans will be on the margins of society, like, if there is a trans person here, we'll understand what I'm saying. Otherwise, you kind of think you know, but we don't. And so it's important you have a trans character. We're past the cross-dressing moment where a man will play that character. Yes, please, look for a trans actor. And so on and so forth. There are many conversations around this. Is Bradley Cooper right to play a Jewish person impersonating a nose? This is a conversation to have. I mean, I think the more we reflect on this, the more we will understand what is right and what is wrong, and what is what we need to promote and what we don't need to promote anymore. It's kind of, the more you discuss it, the more you will understand it.
Maybe you should also free yourself from the notion that there's only one right answer to your question. Yeah. It's a matter of opportunity, in fact, and it's also a matter of the particular project. In Germany, we had a campaign 1 or 2 years ago called Act Out by around 100 actors, gay LGBTQ actors, demanding to be able to play every role they can get because they're actors and that's a profession, and so that's their understanding of their jobs. That's one way of looking at it. There's different ways of looking at it as well, and they're also right. At the end of the day, you will need to stand up for your film, and you will have to have a good understanding of why you came to a certain decision. And that's what you said, right? In a way, you need to go through that journey and come to the decision that fits your project and fits the creatives in your team, and that really makes sense in your particular project, I think.
Thanks.
Yes. Last question, please.
So, it's not a question. I'm also a filmmaker, an artist and everything, but I don't want to talk in this name today. I'm a climate activist, and I don't know if I have my place anymore in this industry, let's say, because I'm very grateful for the panel today and for everyone's vision and for your work. But I don't know if we are aware of the emergency when we are talking. And the topics tackled today are very interesting and essential, but it was kind of a conversation that needed to take place 10 years ago. today... we have a couple of years left. Our industry, the world will crash, the film industry with it. It always thinks it better, but it's not. And this festival tried to be carbon neutral. I see plastic bottles everywhere. I see no one in the trains. I don't know. I think you all came by planes and stuff like that. And it is so hard, because I know it is so hard to make movies, independent movie also, but to make it with that extra luggage you take on your back when you say, okay, I'm going to do it in a sustainable way. I'm going to do it and take care of other issues, etc. And then it becomes practically impossible. But yes, also, is it going to be possible to have an international film world, because we need to think locally. So how is it possible we travel 10 times around the world in 1 year to attend festivals? or to do things like that. How can we do that? I just refuse to go to Tokyo. It's fucking breaking my heart. And I wonder, will we find a way to make movies in 10 years that gives my son a future?
Thank you very much for coming, first of all, because people like you keep pushing and keep bringing and keep pointing. You do a really important, you have an important role here. I really want to thank you for bringing it like this, very straightforward, in your face. I think it's uncomfortable, and some people will be like, what's she saying, or whatever, but I really want to thank you from the heart. I think it's so important to talk about this in those words. Having said that, I do think, yes, we have to think about where do we travel with this. We are social humans. We need to be together. This is an industry that requires the human touch, let's say. I always say this is an industry of people, not of projects. People think it's a project-based thing, and it's actually a people-based thing. With the right people, you will go anywhere, do anything, even bad projects. So we tried during COVID to do everything online, and which we all did, and business, etc. And I think we won a lot of democratizing, and I do believe that hybrid festivals should be the way forward. They should be fully online, etc. But some elements need to be in person, because we need to see each other, because we need to hug each other, because we need to love each other in person, in the way that we can see each other. Having said that, we shouldn't do 20 festivals a year. I agree with you. I used to do 10 festivals maybe in the 20 years ago when I was learning. These days I do maybe 2, maybe 3. And I think that in that way it's not perfect, but we are thinking a bit more about these things. But I am totally with you. I think it starts with protocols. I think it starts with festivals being aware of these, of the bottles, of the way people can access the buildings, on a lot of issues. We are a work in progress as humans. We are absolutely not there on any point. I think the planet could expel us and destroy us as humans, and the planet will refurbish itself and become a green ball without us. If we don't take care of it, that will probably be it. And if we don't, and if it happens, it's kind of, you know, what we were looking for. We were self-deserving of this self-destruction in a way, you know. So we cannot stop being human. We can absolutely be more aware of all of the things we discussed here today. And I agree with you. The sense of urgency is true, but also humans, we really freeze when there is this kind of, we're going to die tomorrow kind of thing, right?
I agree. But I think we also have neighbors.
Of course.
You don't have just another human being in... New York, you can talk to. Of course.
No, my neighbors may not be filmmakers. This is what I mean. And I need to see, my executives who don't know me enough and need to know me more. I need to meet my colleague who I have seen online for a whole year, and I have to renew this human bond. This is also important. I'm not saying with this that we all go to Los Cabos on private plane from LA is great. You know, I think what I'm saying is we need to find a balance that allows us not to lose the human touch. But I completely think that the idea of hybrid festivals and online and a full access in some combination, maybe festivals that are shorter and a part of it is online and the other part of it is in person. I don't know. I'm not what I'm doing, and it's not my business. But I do think that you have a great point, and I thank you for bringing that uncomfortable conversation to point that we got to look at this all the time. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Sorry, we're going to have to finish this panel. Because
sorry, they're coming to stop the whole place.
We already have 30 minutes late.
30.
Thanks a lot for... for your presence today. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
To you, thank you. All four.
Thank you.
Thank you to our communication partners, to Vivendi, the Canal Plus Group, Claudia, special thanks to you. And many thanks to the Venice production team who welcome us today. You want to add something, Sandra?
No, thank you.
Thank you to you. Thank you.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.